From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Oh my goodness, is it Friday already? Am I reading my calendar right now? Wow, I cannot believe that is already Friday, folks. TGIF. Man, I hope everyone is having a nice little closeout to their work week. Man, do we have a show here on Current Sports today. Our phone lines will be open this entire hour at 517-355-9527. As we'll talk about the Redskins. Six federal trademark registrations have been canceled for the Washington Redskins. We didn't get to this conversation yesterday, but we'll kind of dive into it today and get your thoughts on it as well. We'll also talk about the EMU football field. Yes, the Eastern Michigan University Eagles are painting their football field gray. Yeah, I'm not kidding. We'll talk about that. Also, we have a few recruits who have committed to the Michigan State and Michigan football program. And we'll talk about how the running back position has changed in today's game of football. All of that and so much more, but as custom here on Current Sports, before we get to all of that intriguing discussion, here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
I'm Alex Sharg, and these are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Friday, June 20th. University of Michigan football picked up another big verbal commitment today. One day after 2016 quarterback Messiah DeWeaver pledged to the Wolverines, 2015 tight end Chris Clark out of Avon Old Farms High School in Avon, Connecticut, tweeted about his commitment today. He tweeted, quote, "It's official. I'm going to be a Michigan Wolverine. Blessed to have the opportunity. It's been an unreal process. Hashtag go blue." Clark, at 6'6", is rated 4 stars on Rivals.com and is ranked number 4 among 2015 tight ends and the number 2 overall prospect in the state of Connecticut. He's ranked number 146 overall in the nation for 2015. In MSU football recruiting, Grayson Miller, a safety from Scott County High School in Georgetown, Kentucky, is the newest member of the 2015 recruiting class for the Spartans. Miller is the son of former All-Big Ten safety John Miller, who was one of the captains on Michigan State's 1988 Rose Bowl championship team. John Miller is perhaps most remembered for his 4 interceptions in the Spartans' win over Michigan that same season. Grayson Miller tweeted out his commitment Thursday afternoon after attending MSU's football camp. To Lugnuts, the Bowling Green Hot Rods opened the season's second half with a 10-4 rout of the Lansing Lugnuts on Thursday night at Cooley Law School Stadium. Including the end of the season's first half, the Lugnuts have lost 4 of their last 5 games. The Lugnuts and Hot Rods played the second of the 4-game series on a flat screen Friday night at Cooley Law School Stadium, presented by Auto Owners Insurance, with LAFCU fireworks following the game. The Tigers snapped Kansas City's 10-game winning streak and avoided a series sweep with a 2-1 win yesterday. Miguel Cabrera ripped a RBI double, and J.D. Martinez homered for the Tigers, who got 7 strong innings from Anibal Sanchez for the win. Joe Nathan earned his first save since May 29th in style, striking out the side of the 9th to seal the deal. A stress fracture of Joel Embiid's navicular bone is sending shockwaves through the NBA draft less than a week before the league gathers in NYC to select players. The injury is similar to those that derailed the careers of Yao Ming and Bill Walton, and combined with Embiid's back issues, has several draft analysts moving the previously top-rated pick down their draft boards. 11-year-old Lucy Lee, the youngest ever qualifier for the Women's U.S. Open, shot an opening round 78 at Pinehurst No. 2. The 8-over round stole the show at Pinehurst, with a large crowd following her around the course. While Lee struggled on a few holes, the 6th grader continues to wow the golf world with a mature game both on and off the course. The Cleveland Cavalier coaching search may be coming to an end soon, according to a source by the AP. European coach David Blatt was offered the position Thursday night. The 55-year-old Blatt recently resigned as the coach of Maccabi Tel Aviv, this year's EuroLeague champion, to pursue his dream of coaching in the NBA. He was coveted as an assistant by Minnesota and Golden State. Blatt played at Princeton and is regarded as one of the game's best offensive strategists. Cavs general manager David Griffin has set out to find an offensive-minded coach after the club fired Mike Brown on May 12th. In NBA trade rumors, the Golden State Warriors are weighing a potential trade that could send Kevin Love their way by giving up a future first-round pick. In the most recent days, Klay Thompson, David Lee, Harrison Barnes, and Kevin Martin have all come up in recent talks as possible scenarios. The Boston Celtics and Denver Nuggets are other possible suitors for the big man. And finally, in World Cup action, Colombia beat Ivory Coast 2-1, and Uruguay beat England 2-1 as well. Japan and Greece had a draw yesterday, 0-0. Today, Italy plays Costa Rica live right now on ESPN. We'll keep you updated on the show. Switzerland faces France at 3, and Honduras and Ecuador square off at 6. Again, USA and Portugal face off Sunday at 6 p.m. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Time to send it back to Al to start the show. The lines are now open.
All right, thanks a lot, Alex. Again, as he just said so eloquently, the lines are now open. We'll be taking your calls throughout this entire hour of current sports. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. How about Lucy Lee, though, huh? My goodness, 11 years old, the youngest ever. In the history of the Women's U.S. Open. My goodness. She shot a 78. She'll probably miss the cut, folks. But still, I mean, she's an unbelievable talent with future promise for years and years to come. That's exciting stuff. Well, we have a ton to talk about on today's Current Sports. Before we do dive into all of that, I have to remind you all that Current Sports TV, we are back at it next week, folks. I'll be sitting down with MSU hoop great Charlie Bell. Yes, if you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can go online and sign up for free at WKAR.org. That should be a great episode. And thank you to all who tuned in to last night's Current Sports TV episode as I sat down with MSU. Well, not MSU official, local official. Excuse me. I'm so used to saying MSU when you live around the MSU culture. You just, you get used to saying it all the time. But hey, Dan Jimenez, he is a local official for the game of baseball around me. Michigan has been for quite some time. Also a former hoop coach. He was my guest on Current Sports TV last night. If you didn't catch it, you can simply go to video.wkar.org to catch that episode and every single episode we've done in the Current Sports TV history. So that should be a good one to check out. It was a great time sitting down with Dan. Thanks a lot, Dan, for joining me. Well, now who joins me on Current Sports Radio is Matt Luckey and Alex Shark. How you doing, fellas? Happy Friday. Happy Friday.
Oh, good to be here, Al. So glad it's Friday. Ready for the weekend.
Yes, I am too. TGIF. I can't wait to hit the links. Hitting the links tomorrow at 8 a.m. with Alex. I'm ready, man. I went to the driving range yesterday, brother.
Yeah, it's been hard this week to get out. The weather's been bad. I can hear in Matt's voice with the rain and everything. It's just happy to be Friday already with the weather and everything. But I want to talk about this some point in the show. This Lucy Lee thing is crazy. Sixth grade, 12, 11 years old, however old she is. I mean, what happens when she gets to high school? Sorry, I have to miss my test. I'm leaving Thursday to go on the tour. I mean, how is that going to work for this life?
They'll find ways around it. She may be homeschooled because, I mean, she is an unbelievable talent. It was something else. I was listening on the radio this morning, driving to work, like I always do, listening to sports talk, and there was this one journalist who had an interesting take on Lucy Lee and said that, it's a good thing. He says that it's a good thing that Lucy is going to miss the cut for this weekend because it sort of ends the circus show. And he doesn't know if she really deserved to be playing at the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
My jaw hit the floor and I said, you got to be kidding me. That sounds like some haterade, if you ask me. I think this young lady is certainly an unbelievable talent in the world of golf. And, as Matt was talking about before we hit the show, I mean, really three holes is what really blew up her whole dreams of playing in the third and fourth round. Just without those three holes, if she just would have parred those three holes, let's say she did, she would still be in the talks of making some noise in the weekend. But still, just to be playing as an 11-year-old, wouldn't you want that for golf? Seeing as though the man, the myth, the legend, Tiger Woods isn't playing. We've talked countless times here on the show how Tiger Woods' absence from the game of golf kind of dwindled down as the popularity of who tunes in to golf in general. Wouldn't you want that?
Yeah, but one thing to keep in mind, there is a Woods on the tour still.
Oh, yeah, Tiger Woods' niece.
Exactly.
Yeah, she hasn't played great since she's been playing, but still,
She's making some noise, though. Number 37 now on the tour. But, yeah, I mean, I hear exactly where you're coming from and this journalist earlier and where they're coming from with, it's a circus show. It kind of puts her down to earth a little bit.
I totally disagree.
Brings her back down. But I want to say, does this mean that if a basketball player is good enough, he could jump and play college basketball? What I'm saying is this opens the door, Al. As good as she is, it opens the door to every sport.
Well, I don't know, because I think golf is a different dynamic, though, Alex. Because I think with golf, And golf is such a game where if you're good, you're good. I mean, it's so rare if you're fine. You're not going to find an 11-year-old who's ready to play college basketball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
With golf, golf is such a finesse type of sport where if you're out there putting up the numbers, hey, you can play, period. At 11 years old, your body still has to mature a little bit. You know, your understanding of the game has to mature a little bit more. The physical essence of a sport like a basketball or a football still comes into play a lot, other than golf.
But I'm telling you, man, there are so many 7 foot, 7 foot five high school centers out there that are ready to play. Amir Johnson was pretty much ready to play at 6'11 in high school. I mean, it's becoming, as much as I agree with you that physically you still need that maturity, but year by year it's becoming more and more close when it comes to guys being able to play earlier.
Well, I think high school is a little different. I think in high school, we've seen some just freaks of nature in high school, but you won't find an 11-year-old who's ready to play in the NBA. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But 11.
That's just crazy.
Yeah, agreed. Not 11. But this opens the door for 16, 17-year-olds, in my opinion, that are 7 foot already, that are ready to play college basketball, and that could start in high school, already going to college games and playing.
Yeah, this sort of aids in that long, you know, heralded debate about, you know, whether or not the door should be open for that high schooler to make that jump to the NBA. Oh, yeah, this definitely kind of aids in that. I see where you're going. It kind of aids in that essence. But, yeah, we'll see. I do think, and we've had this conversation, I do think that should be open as well.
Matt's itching to say something.
Golf is different, though.
Well, the other side of it is, in golf, you can be an amateur and qualify for a professional tournament. And that's not the case in basketball.
You can't just have a guy
coming off the street. I mean, he has to sign a contract. He has to sign a letter of intent. He has to get into college before he can actually play in college. So it's apples and oranges there. Plus, in golf, I mean, sure, you're playing against other people, but more or less, you're playing against the course. Mm. You know, it's not physically head-to-head against a grown person.
I mean, same thing with tennis. I mean, you've seen a lot of tennis players.
Tennis, I would say,
look at the Williams sisters.
And tennis is a little kind of a hybrid because even though you're just playing individual matches and playing against people, you can still be a quick riser as a young gun. I mean, the lifespan of a tennis player is extremely short, and you have to strike the iron while it's hot while you're young. I mean, that's why you see all these phenoms come up, and then by the time they're in their late 20s, they fade away.
Yep.
Golf is crazy. I mean,
gymnastics is another one.
Well, yeah,
you're in your prime in gymnastics where you're
at 14.
Oh, yeah, 14. Yeah, that's your prime.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? And again, that's another sport where you're competing more so against yourself. It's more of a finesse type of thing where you're out there just doing your thing. You're not going against somebody where, you know, you have to really, well, you are going against somebody, but it's more so, you know, performance based against a course or another objective. So
I
do agree.
And the other thing is, you know, everybody lost their minds when Michelle Wee was the big cheese. Back when she was 14.
Should we pump the brakes then, huh?
Maybe.
A little bit?
I don't know. I would argue that this is more impressive. Lucy Lee is crazy talented, obviously.
She is.
And as far as, you know, what does she do when she goes to high school, I feel like it'll be the same kind of deal as like a child actor.
Right.
Where they are privately tutored. They, you know, go to school when they can.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the earning potential that she has now is crazy.
Through the roof.
I mean, if she's shooting a 78 at Pinehurst.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
At 11.
And she had two birdies, too.
I would have been glad in sixth grade to shoot a 78 on 9.
Right.
I would have been over the moon.
I'm happy right now to do that, okay?
She is insanely talented, and as far as it not being good for golf, that's crazy.
Now. It's nuts, right?
Especially the LPGA. They need all the publicity they can get.
Exactly.
I mean, I can see where he's coming from in the fact that it's kind of a sideshow, and it almost belittles the accomplishments of the women who are on the tour now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see 11-year-old go out there. She's got the whole crowd following her around the course. She's getting all of the media coverage where these ladies who have won multiple majors, who are the dominant forces in golf, are basically playing rounds by themselves.
But at the end of the day,
no one watching. But at the end of the day, that's still interest in golf.
Exactly.
That's interest in the sport that you need. I don't think you can be in a position to choose what gets you coverage. As long as you have coverage, if you are a sport like women's golf, you got to take what you can get.
I agree. And at the end of the day, ratings and money talks. If she's a player who's bringing fanfare and moolah to the table with just her being out there on the course, hey, you know, the camera should be on her all the time. You know what I mean? It should be kind of like a fiasco.
Ice cream in her press conferences.
Right. I love it. Yeah, she's
awesome.
Great. I mean, you know, the big thing that I was worried about is how would an 11-year-old deal with the pressure and the fiasco that the U.S. Open brings about. That was one of the biggest criticisms of her before even starting this round on Thursday. And if you look at, I saw her some highlights of her when she was out there playing. Man, she was as cool as the other side of the pillow out there. Nothing seemed to faze her. She's out there having fun. Again, she had two birdies. Even when she had the double bogey and triple bogey in those three holes. I mean, she still, she didn't panic. I mean, she just seemed to be out there just having fun and playing golf, the game that she loves. And that was the biggest thing I was worried about. I loved her on the tour. I hope hopefully she qualifies and keeps playing in these things. I would love to see. She's going to be a great player as she matures and ages. But man, again, for it being bad for the game of golf, no, the complete opposite. The complete opposite. So,
and for the players that are looking to get in early and they can't because of the contract thing with the NBA, we talked about the Northern invasion into Canada yesterday. Everyone's fleeing north through the Canadian loophole to go play in the Canadian Football League. The high schoolers are going to pull Kurt Warner's out there. The best guys will sign in Canada. They'll come back here when they're 19 years old, and they'll start playing, Matt. That's the loophole they'll probably get to eventually.
We will definitely see. Well, Matt's
shaking his head.
I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't see that one happening either. But phone lines are open right now, guys. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Well, we didn't get to this discussion yesterday. I definitely want to dive into this because it is also a big story. And we actually had a few guests on the show that have addressed this issue. And it goes back to the name, the Washington Redskins. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office canceled six federal trademark registrations for the name Washington Redskins on Wednesday on the grounds that the football team's name is, quote, disparaging to Native Americans and thus in violation of federal trademark laws banning offensive or disparaging language. This is a conversation that has certainly gained so much steam over the years, Matt. And is really now, when you have the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office denying, an official trademark registration for the Washington Redskin name, it's serious. And, first off, before we dive into this, I want to give some context to this discussion because this has happened before. If you go back to, I believe, 1999 it was, what this will do is loss of the trademarks will make it difficult to protect licensing fees and profits from sales of apparel and merchandise that 31 teams divvy up. Now, courts overturned the board's previous ruling in part because the plaintiffs waited too long to voice their opposition after the original trademarks were issued. Now, the case was relaunched in 2006 by a younger group of Native Americans who had recently become adults and therefore would not have been able to file a case earlier. Now, the hearing was held in March of last year. Now, the difference, looking at the previous year when this also went down in some regard compared to this year, Matt, is that now this issue, again, has gained a full head of steam. It has so much support from various, various groups across the board. I think the majority of Native American groups across this nation agree that this name should be changed. And many people, on various radio shows and journalists across the board do agree that this name, if it's offensive to the Native American culture, it should be changed. I don't see why, what's the problem with it being changed, especially now that if this trademark holds true, I believe that, the upper echelons of the Washington Redskins, they will probably appeal this to see if they can get that moolah and can continue this whole fiasco. But why not just change it? That's what this comes down to. I just don't get it. I understand there's rich tradition behind the Redskins franchise, and this name has been a long hallmark for this team. But at the end of the day, this discussion has really caused an uproar in so many socially constructive conversations that why don't you just change it? I just don't get it, man.
No, I agree. I mean, you hear more discussions about what they should call the team than about the team itself.
Exactly. It's a distraction.
Absolutely.
It's become a distraction
now. It's interesting because Dan Snyder, the Redskins owner, to this point has absolutely stuck to his guns 100%.
Right.
He's not backing down at all. He is sticking to the Redskins name no matter what. But now things are changing where it's going to start affecting the bottom line. And when money gets involved and he's receiving less of it, I think that goes farther than all the potential media criticism he's gotten over the last couple years, especially in the last year or so.
Right.
I think once he starts seeing the dollars flowing, slower, not seeing as many come in.
Right.
I think then he starts to maybe back down from that stance and starts to actually consider changing the name. I think, money is the root of all evil. Money makes the world go round. At the end of the day, if he's losing out on some profits from merchandising deals and stuff like that, he's going to definitely have a long, hard look at actually changing the name, and things might actually move forward and get done.
Right.
Until we see the actual effects of it, I don't know. I think maybe we have one more season of the Redskins, but sooner or later, we're going to reach that breaking point.
It's
going
to change.
And it's going to change.
Without a doubt. Looking at today's time, comparing that first ruling, again, a similar ruling from 1999 was overturned on a technicality in 2003, as it just kind of ran down. Now in 2014, and looking at the socially sensitive issues that we've had here on Current Sports when it comes to Donald Sterling, when it comes to so many things. I mean, we talk about Michael Sam, being the first openly gay NFL player. There's so many socially sensitive conversations that are starting to break the barrier in the world and cross over into the world of sports now, that an issue like this really, it's looked at differently now than it was back in 1999 and 2003. Because now, I mean, you have individuals. Dan Snyder is taking a lot of heat from many political, religious, and sports figures who say that it's time for change. Anytime when you have that type of backing in today's world where people are pretty sensitive to pretty much everything, especially when it comes to race. We saw what was handed down with Donald Sterling with the $2.5 million fine and, trying to ban, his ownership of the Clippers. I mean, something like that, which was said in the private confines of his own home, was blown up and he got that type of punishment. I mean, a name like Redskin for a franchise? Oh, you better believe that he's going to catch hell in 2014 for a comment like that.
Absolutely, and I think, it's crazy that it has lasted this long. And you're right that we're looking at it in a different kind of perspective than we were 10, 15
right.
years ago, just because we have seen so many things change
right.
over the last decade. I mean,
so many.
And it starts in similar ways like this, where a group comes forward, says, hey, this is offensive, and then sooner or later it picks up steam, the mainstream media picks it up, and by that point it is a snowball that is rolling out of control. And I think that's what's happening here. Sooner or later, it's going to change. And really, from Dan Snyder's perspective, I understand the thought that the Redskins have a lot of history, the tradition of the franchise, all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, if you change the name, you're going to get some people who hate it,
right.
who are still going to wear their Redskins jerseys proudly and all that hoopla. At the end of the day, though, wouldn't you see the prospect of making even more money by rebranding, picking a new name, making new jerseys, selling new t-shirts? I mean,
yes.
The financial impact of changing the name might be better than keeping it as
yes.
it is.
You can make so much money on just kind of revamping the franchise with a different name, color scheme maybe. I don't know.
Every time teams in the NFL change their jerseys, even slightly,
right.
those things fly off the shelves. I mean,
exactly.
The Charlotte Hornets going from the Bobcats back to the Hornets.
Yeah.
They're going to rake in serious dough.
Exactly.
I don't see what the harm is if the Redskins, if they do it right,
mm-hmm.
they have to do it right. That's the big thing. Because if they change their name too, like Charlotte, they go to the Bobcats. I don't know anybody who has Bobcats gear anywhere.
But even then, look
or
at
who
the
would
numbers.
Want it, but
look at the numbers. When that change was made, though, Matt, just change kind of sparks, especially in sports, when you change a name.
Gotta have the fresh gear.
Yeah, people want the fresh gear. They those numbers still spiked at that point. Even when the Pistons, I remember when the Pistons had those ugly teal jerseys with the
teal
horse on them.
Teal, burgundy.
Those jerseys spiked through the roof, especially, a lot had to do with the fact, though, that Grant Hill was a superstar, too, for the Pistons. But still.
I mean, they have Robert Griffin III.
Right, exactly. Exactly. That's another huge, marketable guy right there. I mean, so, yeah, I would definitely see why not capitalize on giving the franchise a new image, because this could mean even more money in your pocket. I don't know. So, again, I want you guys to weigh on this. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. All right, when we come back after the break, we'll talk about the new EMU football field, which is rocking a new color scheme this upcoming season. And also, we'll talk a few commitments for MSU in Michigan. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. What you gonna do? Do you wanna get out? What you gonna do? You wanna get out? What you gonna do? Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, our phone lines are open right now, folks. 517-355-9527. You can also go to my Twitter page, Al Martin WKR, and tweet me, and also our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Well, I'll tell you what, Matt, EMU, Eastern Michigan University, they have announced a new turf for the 2014 football season. And you know what color the turf is being painted? It will be gray. A concrete gray color scheme. 100 yards of gray is what they're calling it. And again, that will be in effect for this upcoming football season. I don't know. You know, it's, they said, you know, this is a quote from, let's see here, I believe the EMU's athletic director, Heather Like. She says, quote, "We are building our football program from the ground up. Literally, only a handful of universities have different color turfs, and will be the first with gray. It builds an identity that matches the toughness of this team." And then, well, you know, with the introduction of the turf, Creighton also debuted a new nickname, the Factory, for Ryan Searns Stadium. So just to kind of give you an example of, you know, how different franchises are trying to revamp themselves. Creighton's went on to say, quote, why not make it like a parking lot? We said we would play on one. That's who we are. We want to reinforce that identity and that worth ethic. Let's make it like a factory, like the blue-collar area. Ypsilanti, of course, is home of Eastern Michigan University. Oh, that's a nasty color. Gray? What do you think about when you first heard this story, Matt?
Well, you know, it's one thing to want to stand out. It's another thing to try and stand out by making your field gray. I cannot imagine a duller color to make your field gray.
Yes, gray? Like, oh, that should be, you feel depressed going out there.
I mean, it's one thing, you know, because obviously the field color that everybody associates with being cool and cutting edge is Boise.
Blue, Boise State.
Boise State blue. Yeah. At least that's their primary color. Right. Their colors are blue and orange.
Yeah,
Eastern Michigan's colors are green and white.
Right.
You're not even using a secondary color. When you have to paint your field the tertiary color of your school, and I know they've worked gray into their uniforms a lot
over the
last decade or so, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. It looks like a parking lot. Are they going to have, you know, yellow parking spots in the field?
Oh, what if they do that? If they're going to go with that, they should do that.
If you're going to do it, you might as well
go
do it
right.
Baby. Yeah, absolutely. But I just...
Man, it's you know, when I heard about it, I thought, you know, because I got a text from a friend of mine, well, my cousin actually, who attends EMU, and he heard about the story, and he said, "Al, did you hear about it?" I'm like, "No, is this a joke?" And I went online, and no, it's not a joke. They're
not
actually going to do this, and you know what? This is really done to breathe some sort of life into this program, which has been terrible. I'm just going to call it like it is. Terrible. The Eagles finished 2-10 last season. They have won 12 games, just 12 games over the last five seasons, and haven't had a winning season since going 6-5 back in 1995. Now, this is all fine and dandy. You know, I see what they're trying to do here. They're trying to bring some sort of identity and breathe some sort of life into this awful football program. But painting your football field gray, frankly, isn't going to contribute into winning football games. You got to hit the weight room. You got to perform well in practice. You got to do well in recruiting. There's other aspects that this team should be focusing on than painting their football field gray, which, by the way, is going to cost a lot of money to do so as well, man.
Right, and you say, you know, breathe life into the football program.
Yeah.
Nothing says breathing life like a nice drab gray. What are they thinking?
I know, right?
They might as well just paint it like taupe. Just something like... as bland as possible. I don't know. It seems like I'm being harsh, but I can't get over it.
I can't either, man. You know, now work on the project is expected to start before the end of June with removing the current playing surface. The expectation is that the entire project will be completed by the first week of August and for the start of EMU's training camp. So it will be artificial turf, obviously. You know, that's how Boise State's is with the blue. But, you know, maybe I have to see it first. Looking at the picture right now, the cartoon, if you will, that they've drawn out and kind of put the color scheme in it, it just doesn't look attractive. But, hey... EMU, we haven't been talking about EMU football up until this moment.
That's
so maybe
true.
They're doing something right here.
That's true. At the very least, they're making headlines.
Right.
Sure, it's not for the best reasons yet.
Right.
But what if they come out fired up?
Yeah.
They play well on the gray.
Yep.
I mean,
possibly. We'll
maybe,
see.
Maybe they'll get Liam Neeson to do some voiceover work for their PA system or something.
They need
he was
it.
In that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just anything with Gray, they can just start running with. They've got so many tie-ins available.
Now. Yeah, that's
they're
true.
Opening a lot of doors. I'll say that.
They certainly are. Man, we have a caller right now who wants to talk about Redskins, which we talked about in the first segment. Ed, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
I'm doing well, but first I want to comment on the Gray real quick. you got to wonder what was their second choice for a color for grass, brown?
I know, right? Yeah. Depressing colors, man.
what are they thinking? But anyway, I got the solution for the Redskins. Keep the name, but change the logo to a potato. Mm-hmm. They could have Redskin potatoes, and they'd do fine.
Huh.
I love it.
That is interesting. That's pretty creative right there, Ed. Do you think they should change the name?
What's that?
Do you think they should change the name, though?
You know, I think it does no harm to change it, and I think it does some good. So I think that they probably should.
Gotcha. Hey, thanks a lot, Ed. Appreciate the call.
Okay. See you guys later.
All right, ladies and gents, again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Alex?
The thing I have about the potatoes is, what player would want to be known as a potato?
Yeah, the name isn't really appealing, is it? You know?
Yeah,
I mean, you could call them the Spuds.
Have we ever done the worst nicknames in sports history on this show?
I don't know.
Maybe
I kind of like the potatoes.
You like the potatoes?
Yeah. Why not?
Maybe it's a grow on me.
Redskin
I didn't like the Texans.
Potatoes.
You know, I didn't like the Texans when the Texans first came out. The Texans, I hated the Texans, and that's kind of growing.
I mean,
on
when
me
I
now.
Think of the potatoes and bringing it to life, I think of Mr. Potato Head. And for him, that's just someone I laugh at and play with.
The potatoes. We're going to play the potatoes today. I don't know.
Bunch of potatoes. I could just picture people just, bunch of potatoes out there, you know.
I mean, so. The tater tots, the French fries, I mean, the mashed potatoes.
There's a lot of creative things you could do
there,
with that.
There are other red foods
I'm
out
sure
there.
Beat writers would love it. Yeah. You've got so
many
headlines.
I don't know if I like
potatoes
either. I may be with Alex, and I don't know if I'm not thinking about it. It
no,
just
I mean,
in
it's
now.
It's a joke, and, yeah, and it's
potatoes.
Fine.
I think
it'd be funny. I mean, they would have to, you know, remake all those T-shirts. They could just slap a decal that says potatoes on underneath all those Redskins T-shirts. You're cutting corners in terms of rebranding.
Yeah.
It seems
yeah.
like it's right up Dan Snyder's alley.
I could see. You know, something needs to happen. It needs to happen soon. It's pretty creative. If you got any suggestions on this, folks, 517-355-9527.
Maybe sweet potatoes. You sweeten it a little bit.
No, that just went down the drain quickly.
See,
there.
Because if you're gonna
the sweet potato,
the only reason
it sweetens the name potato. Yeah.
Sweet shouldn't be in your name if you're a hardcore football team. The
That's
sweet
true
potatoes,
too.
But
I don't know.
But sweet potatoes are more Redskin than a regular potato.
Yeah, but a football franchise
but a
can
red
be called
Redskin potato. Is red. I mean, it's got
yeah,
red skin.
Yeah, a red skin.
That's
right.
Why it's called a Redskin potato.
Exactly.
And
That's
the only
true.
Reason you're bringing potatoes in the first place is so you can keep Redskins.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about it all here on Current Sports, as you see. We have no boundaries here on the show. 517-355-9527. Let's hit the second break. When we come back, we have a lot more to chat about, including two recruits for the MSU and Michigan football team. And also, how has the running back position changed over the years? Former Lion running back great Barry Sanders has an interesting take on it. Don't go anywhere. We return in the blink of an eye. Welcome back to Current Sports. It is Friday. That means Funky Friday. That's some Tina Marie for you. Hope you're enjoying that. Well, folks, let's talk about recruiting really quick. As mentioned at the top of the hour on our Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners, Chris Clark, yes, Michigan, picked up another verbal commitment today, one day after the 2016 quarterback, Messiah DeWeaver. What a name that is. Messiah DeWeaver. He better be good, folks. Messiah DeWeaver. He plays to the Wolverines. 2015 tight end Chris Clark this morning out of Avon Old Farms High School in Avon, Connecticut. He tweeted his commitment today, tweeting, quote, "It's official. I'm going to be a Michigan Wolverine. Blessed to have the opportunity. It's been an unreal process. Pound, go blue." This story is pretty interesting, though, because Clark had visited both U of M and Michigan State this same week And Rivals.com had reported that his combination of size and athletic ability could make him a versatile weapon in the Michigan offense. You know, so he chose U of M over Michigan State. And if you look at Grayson Miller is a safety from Scott County High School out in Georgetown, Kentucky. He is the newest member of Michigan State's 2015 recruiting class. He is the son of former All-Big Ten safety John Miller, who was one of the captains on Michigan State's 1988 Rose Bowl championship team. John Miller is perhaps the most remembered for his four interceptions in the Spartans' win over Michigan that season. And, you know, looking at, go back to Chris Clark again. He had visits for both Michigan State and U of M, and he kind of tweeted earlier, during the week that, Coach D is a great guy, had a great time. You know, kind of alluding to the fact that maybe he'll be leaning towards Michigan State. But again, this is the reason why I hate recruiting. I despise recruiting. If recruiting was walking down the street, I might jump them. I hate recruiting, all right, folks, with a passion, because you never know what these kids are thinking. They may tweet one thing and tweet another thing the next day. But, hey, that's the way the cookie crumbles. Alex, what do you know about these two recruits? What do you think about them?
I know a good amount about Chris Clark. What they describe in terms of his versatility is really true. I mean, this guy, after watching some of his tapes and highlights, he's 6'6", 250, so he's already got the size. It's not like he has much more growing to do. He's already a pretty good size for a tight end. Looking at him muscular-wise, when he's running and stuff like that, and when he's blocking, I mean, this guy is college ready. You can plug this guy in right away and start playing, and that's why he's rated so high. This isn't a 3-star, 4-star that has a high ceiling. This is a guy who's already ready to go. As far as his catching abilities, he has great hands. He's making one catch grabs in some of his highlight tapes. The only thing about him is he comes from Connecticut, which isn't an Ohio, but it's not necessarily a North Dakota. I mean, it's not the best of competition, but I mean, for what you can see with this guy, watching him when he went to the 5-star challenge, he's dominant there. He's rising up the draft off the recruiting boards. He could raise his way up to being probably a top 25, 50 player.
Did you think he would be a Michigan State recruit, or are you surprised that
honestly,
he went to Michigan?
Honestly, I was surprised he went to Michigan.
You thought he was...
Beside from Michigan State, I mean, there were other teams after this guy. Right. I mean, nationally, he had USC and Ohio State. He had pretty much every other team after him. So, for me, coming from the East Coast, as we all know, a lot of the East Coast guys, they like to come to the Midwest because of the schooling. Typically in the Big East, you don't get as great schooling as you do in the Big Ten. So when it comes to football-wise, that's kind of the deal you go with that. But, I mean, with his size, I mean, this isn't a typical Big Ten tight end. This is a guy you'd probably see in the SEC.
What do you think about Grayson Miller?
Grayson Miller, I don't know too much about him, but I know that he has some great, great 40 times and vertical jump. I mean, he ran a 4.48 40. So I know that he has the numbers and stats to prove for it. I don't know what he does on the football field. I haven't really watched too much of his highlights. But no matter what, I mean, he's got the legacy. And Michigan State with Matt Morrissey and the Buffs, they love legacy. So, I mean, I think that tells a lot. What about you, Matt? Do you have any insight on him?
Obviously, his dad was a great player. If he has the measurables, I mean, you have to trust in the coaching staff to develop him further. I mean, he's got speed to play either safety or that kind of star linebacker, so he can be a versatile guy when he comes in. He's got to put on weight. He's only 195 pounds. That's not going to cut it in the Big Ten. So he's got to put on a little weight. That'll happen. I'm sure he'll come in redshirt his first year like most of the freshman defensive players do and then kind of get into the system.
Yeah.
As far as Chris Clark goes, and as far as Al, you talking about how he – tweeting all this stuff. I mean, he said similar things when he went to Ohio State, too, about how much he loved his visit.
I was going
to
bring that up. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that gets reopened.
Right. It's a verbal commit.
Exactly.
You know?
Which at this point means
nothing.
Literally nothing.
Verbal commits mean nothing
in the
world of recruiting. And that's
why you see so many coaches kind of pushing for that early signing period.
Right.
So we don't have to deal with all this stuff.
Right.
Where the fan bases get super riled up about a guy who commits verbally.
And he gives you the okie doke, and it's like,
then
what?
3 months later, he changes his mind after a sweet weekend right. in Miami and decides to go to Florida.
What?
Exactly. It's just there's so many variables still at play with these guys.
These are kids, man.
And it's one thing, maybe he's just a super charismatic guy, which is entirely possible. Maybe he loved all of his recruiting experiences and chose Michigan. That's fine.
Mm.
I wouldn't be shocked.
I wouldn't be shocked, no.
If it opens up
with
again.
Anyone, yeah.
With anyone, exactly.
With anyone. It doesn't matter what recruit it is, yeah.
One thing to add about Grayson is that in his state championship game, he gets the game-winning interception to seal the deal. How great is that? 21-14, you get the game-winning interception, just like his dad got the four against Michigan. I mean, it shows. I'm sure D'Antonio looked at that and said, all right, this is a playmaker right here. This is a guy that we want, as D'Antonio says, to make big plays, to make plays. So,
yeah,
fits the bill.
And it's certainly a big week. Of course, with the camps going on and, you know, these kids having, you know, a chance to visit, not only visit camp, but, you know, have a one-on-one kind of chemistry building type of thing going on with the players who actually work, who are on the MSU and Michigan football team. It's a real cool. I think this week is kind of a game changing week in recruiting because of that aspect. You know, yeah. You have these kids working one-on-one with possibly their future teammates. I mean, hey, that's experience. Right
and like
there.
We said, we can't count on Chris Clark to maybe keep it with everyone decommitting here and there. But is it just me, guys? It seems that there are so many players committing earlier and earlier and earlier than ever before, especially with Michigan and Michigan State. Michigan, they already have their whole 2015 class almost wrapped up already.
Yeah, almost.
And it's two years away.
Yeah, and exactly. that's a dangerous game to play because you don't know how these guys are going to develop in the next 2 years. You know, it's one thing that he looks great as a high school sophomore. You have no idea if he's going to keep things going in that trajectory moving forward or if he's going to kind of peak early and be an average college player. That's why it's such an inexact science, and it's so tough to decide who's a four-star, who's a three-star, and if that even matters. I mean, sure, it kind of matters.
Because they could be with a three, four-star right now, and then maybe next year during your senior year just could completely plummet. I don't know.
Exactly.
Know?
Or they could blow up and be a top 10
or get injured. You never know. There's so many factors.
That's why when it comes to committing early, Michigan implemented, because back when Lloyd Carr was coach and even Rich Rod, it was kind of a spotty here and there thing. Mm-hmm. They were a lot more lenient on commitments. How it works now is when Hoke took over, if you're committed, you're going to stay committed. There's not a lot of backing out. Obviously, they had some recent cases, but I mean, last year they only had, I think, one or two guys with attrition that naturally backed out. Yeah. I mean, when you're committing, you're keeping it. And if you want to go to other schools, you can't stay committed. You got to decommit. You're not committed anymore. And when Lloyd Carr was coach at Michigan, I know that when you were committed, you still could look at some schools if you want. And that was their effort to pull out of those Ohio kids that had the Ohio State offers. They wanted to go down to Columbus one or two last times before. And Lloyd Carr was okay with that because they wanted to keep the relationship. But no, with Hoke now, if you want to go down the street to Columbus and you want to go check it out, quote unquote, you're not committed to Michigan anymore.
Yeah, commitment is a funny word when it comes to these high school athletes, like Kim Kardashian kind of commitment, you know, her commitment in her relationships, I guess. You never know.
Please.
You never know. You can't really, it's a funny thing. All right, well, we have a caller right now. Apachu wants to weigh in on the Redskins name change. How you doing, Apachu?
I'm doing okay, man. You guys are touching home base again. You know, let's stay with the skin name, and let's just call them skinheads. And change the logo and have some bald-headed white boys and see what people think about that. You know, that's a beautiful logo. I've always loved it. I bought their hats, and I took out the stitching and said Redskins. And here in Oklahoma a few years ago, you had an issue about the Chiefs.
Yep.
Using the name Chief and the logo Chief and all that, and the people who were for it were saying that this is wonderful how they're paying tribute to Native Americans and their ancestry and so forth and so forth. You know, you go to Oklahoma, you're not going to find a Native American teacher. You're probably not going to find Native American students. You're probably not going to find too many Native Americans in Oklahoma, period. There's this constant use and benefit, profiteering from images of our ancestry. And you know what? Leave us alone, man. You know, you did what you did, and just leave us alone. I know even if they change the Redskin logo, it's not going to benefit us, but you know what? Change it, man. And what's surprising to me is both with the LA NBA team, Sterling.
Yeah, Donald Sterling.
Sterling, and then the owners of the Redskins, I understand, are Jewish Americans who have a heritage that is similar to ours, and I would think that they would be sensitive to what we're enduring, but I'm not seeing that, and I'm not hearing people talk about that. Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it.
Hey, Apache, before you leave, I this is an interesting conversation, Matt, too. You know, hearing a dialogue about this whole subject, you know, Apache, I want to ask you really, really briefly, you know, when you talk about the Redskin name being used for the Washington Redskins, you know, there are other names, as you just alluded to, like, you know, you had the kind of debate around this area with the Okemos Chieftains, and should their name be changed to the Chiefs, and should it, you know, be changed completely? There's other names, you know, such in baseball as such as the Cleveland Indians, you know, other names like that. Does that really rub the Native American community the wrong way as well? Is he still there, Alex? Hello?
This is Apache.
Yes. Did you hear what I just, did you hear my question, Apache?
Well, I speak on the topic of identity in general, mm-hmm. and indigenous people in particular. Indian is a reference. It's a category of people who were discovered in the Western Hemisphere. All people in the Western Hemisphere were referred to as Indios, Spanish word for Indians. Okay, and later that category would be gerrymandered. Today, many Indians are Spanish speaking, called Hispanic and Latinos and so forth, when in fact they're the indigenous people, and there's a reason for that. That's gerrymandering of identities.
Mm-hmm.
As far as you know, like the you know, when I see that guy, the tomahawk shot, that's very disturbing to me. Okay, somehow we're great people, but when we were fought, we were called savages and satanic and all that other kind of stuff. And now they're saying we were some great people, you know. You take a look at the Cleveland Indians, that silly-looking Indian on that hat. That's very disturbing to me. Mm-hmm. But I'm a very fortified individual. Luckily, I've done a lot of study and reading and heard a lot of lectures. So I think my confidence is very strong and my appreciation for my ancestry. I'm atavistic. I truly respect my ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take the word Redskins, a lot of Indians call themselves skins. And where do you think they got that from? They got it from the Redskins. They run around, instead of calling themselves brothers, like black folks do, mm-hmm. they call themselves skins. And so sometimes the only educational mechanism we have is that of the people who took advantage of us or take advantage of us. And so I hopefully that answers your questions there.
Hey, thanks a lot, Apache. Always great to have you on the show. Thanks a lot for the call, Apache.
Thank you, man. Appreciate the subject.
Yes, you know, it's so interesting, Meg. I want to ask that question because it's one thing for us to sit up and powwow about this subject, but it's another thing to hear it from, you know, someone who it directly affects, you know, directly from, you know, a Native American. And I'm always intrigued because we can sit up here all day. And I've always, you know, been talking about this subject, talked to, you know, a few friends of mine who are Native American, and asked them directly, I mean, how this affects them. And if it's affecting that group of people to the extent of, you know, as Apache just so eloquently put, why not change it? I think it's a fine line in this discussion. I just think it's a matter of time for this to be changed, and it should be changed.
I do too, and like you said, I mean, you know, we can say all we want, but that's not our life experience.
Not at all.
You know?
Not at all. And we don't live that.
Certainly not Dan Snyder's.
Exactly.
And even if there are some parallels with him coming from a Jewish background, if there are any parallels, then he should understand it even more. I mean, and he should be, you know, leading the charge for change.
Right.
But I think he's just kind of swayed by the money.
Right.
I mean, he always has been.
Right.
How he's run the Redskins, he's always been, you know, having these huge free agent signings that never work out. You know, just trying to, you know, use his financial prowess to change the course of the franchise. But, you know, they haven't been successful under Dan Snyder ever.
No, never. You know, and that's the thing. You know, when you look at this conversation, money talks at the end of the day, and money certainly talks in his case. But this has gotten so much press and so much discussion that there's a lot of pressure on him to make the change. And I think he will eventually. So, all right, really quick, we have about 10 minutes left in the show. Again, you can call in just like Apache did. And Ed, thanks a lot, guys, for calling. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, Barry Sanders had some interesting comments when it comes to the running back position in today's football. Barry Sanders, he's never had a 50-catch season during his Hall of Fame career, but if the former Detroit Lions running back were playing in the NFL today, he said he thinks he'd be a bigger weapon in the passing game. Quote, I would guess they'd use me probably coming more of the out of the backfield more. Again, he told this to the Free Press at the NFL draft last month. Quote, try and utilize some of those matchups with linebackers. Sanders had at least 300 carries in 7 of his 10 NFL seasons, but he was used lightly in the passing game for most of his career. Now, he did top 40 receptions 3 times in his career, 1991, 1994, and 95. The Lions made the playoffs all 3 of those seasons, and Sanders posted 3 of the 5 highest rushing totals of his career in those years. So, basically, the gist of this, guys, is that Barry thinks that the position of the running back has changed since his playing days, so much so that running backs are more so used in the receiving game and slightly less than what they used to be used in the backfield. I totally agree with him. The question is, you know, for me, when I look at this whole thing, is this good for the game? In the running back's regard. Now, because, you know, running back's, you know, lifespan in the NFL is shorter than any other position in the NFL. And when you're looking at all positions across the board, running backs have the shortest lifespan in the game. With them being used more so now in the reception game, almost as an extra receiver, if you will, that definitely, I think, puts more years onto their lifespan because it's the daily wear and tear. I mean, everybody's not an Emmitt Smith, where your career could last years upon years and you can just take the beating upon the beating each and every Sunday. I mean, even though, you know, over time the game has evolved in its treatment and the way that, you know, injuries and just the overall body is treated on a you know, weekly basis in the NFL, still, I mean, that's a lot of wear and tear on you. And trying to alleviate that at all costs, putting, you know, adding, you know, a running back as a receiver definitely helps in that regard. Now, whether or not Barry will be, because this is another discussion, diving into this subject, it was brought up. This is another aspect to this subject on whether or not Barry Sanders would be Barry Sanders if he was a running back in today's league. What are your thoughts on that, Matt?
Oh, my gosh. Barry Sanders, I think, might be better in today's league than he was back then. He was such a feast or famine back in the first place. I mean, he would have, you know, he'd lose 4 yards. He'd gain 2.
Right.
He'd lose 3. And then you break a 64-yarder that would absolutely take your breath away. And you know, the game of football has changed so much into where offenses are trying to scheme to get playmakers in space. I mean, how many times do you hear that when you watch a football game? Oh, look at this guy. He is so good in space. Mm-hmm. Barry Sanders would be the best player ever in space. I mean, he didn't even need space, and he would make it happen.
Right.
But if you get him out in the flat and have it where he has to make 2 guys miss and then he's gone, I mean, we might be talking about
crazy
Lions,
right?
Super Bowls, as funny as that is to say. But,
yeah,
I mean, just getting him out isolated in the flat against a linebacker, against a safety.
Right.
There's nobody who could stop him.
No, not
I
at
mean,
all.
I mean, if you don't have 4 guys tackling him, he's not going to be brought down. He's going to keep running, and he's going to score.
Yeah.
And the more ways you can get him out of kind of the glut of running straight up the gut and into the line and into the teeth of the defense, the better off he'd be. I mean, you see it with, you know, running backs getting more catches. You also see it with running backs splitting duties. I mean,
yeah,
there just aren't that many guys who are the sole running back on a team. It's definitely a 2-horse race nowadays. I mean, look at the Lions with Bush and Bell.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way the game is nowadays. And, you know, Barry Sanders, was such a freak talent. I mean, he was, like you said, he was the king, in my opinion, was the king in creating a play, creating space, you know, eluding individuals. I mean, he was unbelievable. He's one of those freak talents. And I think if he played in today's NFL, even with the way the NFL is nowadays, as I, you know, kind of put, you know, running backs are being used as receivers now, being put in the flat and even running right routes now. Barry Sanders, you know, looking at his undeniable talent in the backfield, you gotta be Stevie Wonder to not see how good this man was in the backfield. And if you see how good he is, why won't you keep calling plays like that for him? I understand, you know, the game has changed, but talent is undeniable. If he has that, because Barry, again, when you had him in the backfield, he would go right, he would go left, he could juke you out, he could fake you out. I mean, he was such a freak talent that the sky's the limit for him in today's NFL. I mean, without a doubt, he was so good. And, you know, I think the game is more dynamic now, I would say, because with quarterbacks who don't just have a pocket presence, who can also put it on the ground now, the game is certainly dynamic in many, many areas. I don't think in today's NFL you need a dominant running back to win a Super Bowl. You're looking at this past Super Bowl, you had Marshawn Lynch, who was one of the best running backs in the game. But you don't need a running back who constantly is holding the load on the ground all the time to win a Super Bowl. I think the game is so much evolved in that. I mean, look at the Broncos, who made it to the Super Bowl this year. You know, there's so many variances to weigh into this. Matt, we only have 4 minutes left. We have a caller right now. I want to get to him before we end the show. He just hung up. Well, we had Tom from Lansing. Well, we only have 4 minutes now, guys. But I just think now, in today's NFL, though, Barry, the sky's the limit for the guy. And when you have a freak talent like that, it doesn't matter what era you play in, I think.
No, and if anything, I feel like he would almost fit better in this era. Because, he could potentially be a 1,500-yard rusher and a 1,000-yard receiver in the same season. He was that good at making things happen. And, I mean, imagine, you know, you talk about today's quarterbacks, how they're more mobile. Can you imagine an offense with a mobile quarterback and Barry Sanders running a zone read? I mean, defenses would be having nightmares trying to game plan for that because you never know what could happen.
Exactly.
I think, you know, just getting him with opportunities to make guys miss in the open field would only benefit the team. It would only benefit his career longevity and the fact that he could just absolutely dominate people, make people look silly on a more consistent basis than he did running out of the eye or a power formation.
Right.
I mean, you spread him out. You spread the field. I mean, Barry's licking his chops.
Oh, man, he was unbelievable, dude.
Unbelievable.
I miss Barry. And you just think, if he would have played longer in his career, he would have definitely been the all-time leading rusher.
Easily.
I mean, if you look at, you know, the guys who are in front of him, I mean, you know, with Emmitt Smith, I believe, was it Walter Payton, I think? Is the other one, if he would have played, and they had longer careers than Barry. If Barry would have played, the sky's the limit for the guy. But interesting stuff. Again, if you want to weigh in on this, folks, we only have 3 minutes left in the show. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also tweet me at AlMartinWKR. Really quickly, an update, a huge update in the World Cup. Costa Rica has topped Italy 1-0 and has reached the knockout round. How surprising is that? That's unbelievable. Costa Rica. I mean, Italy was a big favorite in that group. Oh, my goodness. This is unbelievable, folks. I love the World Cup. For my reflection Friday, really briefly, it's hard to not go with the World Cup. I mean, looking at the fiasco that has ensued this past week with everybody just flocking to the televisions, I tell you what, though. I would say this, though. Lucy Lee is a close number two for me, though, because looking at that 11-year-old and seeing what she did, you know, yesterday, and I can't wait to see what she does today. I mean, she's unbelievable to watch, too. But for me, World Cup, Lucy Lee, that's my reflection.
Those are two great stories this week. I'm going to go with Joel Embiid's foot fracture.
Yeah, that's big, man.
It's one thing to have a guy get hurt after the draft or something, but this is a week before the draft. This is the, you know, all things considered, the number one pick in the draft. He's the top domino, and now he's going to tumble down draft boards. Changes the entire landscape of the draft with less than a week before the names are called.
So I always say about big men, you never know.
Teams are going to be scrambling.
Yep.
It's going to be fun to watch.
You cannot trust a big man in the NBA draft. Oh, I tell you. All right, Alex.
My moment has to be the Redskins conversation. We've had so many callers on today. The fact that the U.S. Trademark and Patent Office is getting involved with this, it's to a way higher level now than ever has. I mean, that's a big deal, guys.
Yeah, to me, I think it's just a matter of time before it's changed, folks. Well, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on WKR East Lansing. Sign up for Current Sports TV next week, Wednesday night at 6 p.m. I'll be sitting down with MSU hoop great Charlie Bell. You don't want to miss that one, as always. Take care. Have a fantastic weekend. And be easy, people.